The following is an episode of This Alt-Right Life, a podcast I hosted for the website Right On from May 2016 to January 2017. It is presented in its original, uncensored form. This episode of This Alt-Right Life, an interview with Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, was originally aired on September 19th, 2016.
This is This Alt-Right Life with Matt Forney.
Get ready. The world is changing.
And a very warm welcome to you, whether you're listening in Europe, America, or anywhere in the world. I'm Matt Forney, and this is This Alt-Right Life. I'm coming to you from my makeshift studio, somewhere in the seedy underbelly of Chicago, Illinois. Thank you for tuning into this 20th episode of the program for this, the week of September 19th, 2016. On this episode of the show, I'll be talking to Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. Blonde is an American conservative YouTube host. You can check out her YouTube channel by searching Blonde in the Belly of the Beast on YouTube, and you can also follow her on Twitter at twitter.com/libtardamerica. Additionally, along with Matt Christensen, aka Skag3, Blonde co-hosts the Beauty and the Beta live radio program, which airs every Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern. On this show, Blonde and I discussed the recent Guccifer 2.0 leak of confidential files from the Democratic National Committee, as well as the collapse of Hillary Clinton's campaign in the past week. We also talk about the collapse of men going their own way in the men's rights movement, how a Trump presidency might herald a return to traditional relationships in America, and much more, so stay tuned. Please note that I will be doing an additional episode of This Alt-Right Life this Friday. The show will resume its normal schedule next week. Blonde, welcome to This Alt-Right Life. Thank you for coming on the program.
Hello.
Well, I do this with all my first-time guests because it's always a good idea to have the interview subject define himself or herself in their own words. So for the people in the audience who don't know who you are, Blonde, could you just give a brief overview of your work, your YouTube channel, that sort of thing?
Sure. I started a YouTube channel, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, about 6 months ago because I live in Seattle. I formerly lived in New York City and Los Angeles, and I went to Mizzou. And so I think that about 6 months ago, I took a trip to Europe and I was just seeing the Islamization of these cities that I used to love. And it just really propelled me into this mindset where I could no longer take it anymore. And so I made my channel. It's kind of been an outlet. But yeah, I just talk about feminism. I talk about Islam. I talk about Seattle, which is like a really deeply afflicted city as far as liberalism is concerned, and the homeless population is out of control. There are tons of millennial homeless, and so, you know, I just talk about the things around me all the time, the stupidity that I'm surrounded by all the time. And then I'm of course fascinated with this election cycle like everybody else. So
yeah, I mean, you the whole Belly and the Beast thing, you live in Seattle, which is, you know, I tried my experiment. I lived in Portland for about 4 years ago, actually. I took a whole hitchhiking trip from upstate New York to Portland just as it was something I'd wanted to do ever since I was a kid. And after I spent a few months in Portland, which was it's a nice place to visit, but living there and living on the West Coast in general just slowly drove me insane. It wasn't just like wasn't just the leftism. Like, you don't get this so much in Seattle, but because people in Seattle actually have jobs, but people in Portland are so smug and full of themselves when their highest ambition in life is like working at Voodoo Donut into their 30s. Like,
oh God, that's exactly how Seattle is though too. Everybody's so smug, except we have this like group of beta millennial tech nerds. So that kind of helps to diffuse that a little bit. That's probably why it's not quite as potently stupid as Portland.
And that's the first time that the phrase beta millennial tech nerds has ever been used in a positive sense.
I know, seriously. Like, that's my favorite demographic of people here, just because everybody else is so stupid.
But yeah, talking about the election and such, one of the big items of interest this week was I'm sort of catching Blonde up to speed on this because it slipped for the news cycle. But WikiLeaks and Guccifer 2.0 dropped another set of DNC leaks, which I'll summarize the findings in terms of importance. Well, number one, the Democrats let their donors' credit card information get out. It was contained in an Excel file in the leak. There was no encoding on it, no protections whatsoever, which is not only massively stupid.
It was just an unprotected Excel sheet.
Unprotected Excel spreadsheet. Everything was in there. The type of card, the type of, the numbers, the zip codes, everything.
Oh God.
Yeah, not only is that, it's a massive violation of credit card of law, and it could actually lead to the DNC losing their ability to process credit cards, period. That's a major no-no. And it actually came out a day later. This was not reported on me, but I think it was The Observer. The Hillary campaign has actually been overcharging small donors. Like, if you gave $20 or $25 to the Hillary campaign, the campaign retained your credit card info and would bring up additional donations, unauthorized ones, to take more money out of your pockets. Always under $100. Yeah. Because once you when a fraudulent charge is over $100, that's when the banks get involved. But if it's like $20, right. $25, no one notices. And it actually got to the point where one pissed off donor is actually going to the Minnesota Attorney General to do something about it.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Well, none of this is surprising to me, but, you know, still a huge bummer.
Yeah, talk about, you know, literally robbing from the poor to give to the rich. Kind of indicate that the Hillary campaign's in dire straits if they have to resort to robbing literally their poorest donors just to stay afloat.
Oh, yeah. I think they're totally screwed, especially with this Hillary's health thing. I actually just did an episode on my channel about how I think Trump is going to win in a landslide because of this health issue. So I've been really focused on that this week, which is why I've missed these leaks. I'm kind of amazed. It was not very well covered even in the right outlets.
This is probably the worst week that Democrats have had since the South seceded.
It's so bad, but it's just been so satisfying. Like, I've had a great week.
Oh, God, yes.
Lovely to watch.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, we should probably touch on the Hillary's health thing because I didn't talk about that in the last episode. But I think that really is going to be remembered as a turning point of the campaign, quite possibly this epoch of American history. We saw Hillary just completely again, for those of you who missed it, she and Trump were at the 9/11 memorial in New York City, and as she was going out, she had a seizure, a pretty serious one too from the footage. And this, number one, this pretty much catapulted removed any doubt from in the public's mind as to her health problems. Because prior to that, the media was trying to dismiss it as, it's a conspiracy theory, blah, blah, blah. The media could not hide it anymore. That's where they started getting up these nonsense stories about pneumonia and, oh, she was overheated, you know, but she apparently, you know, she was overheated on a nice, hot, burning.
Like sun, yeah, it was 75 degrees or something like that.
A famously scorching temperature in New York City.
You know,
there's like magma spurting from the sewers. There's like brimstone raining from the sky.
And it was like early morning too.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because I live in the Philippines, but it's like, you know, yes, 75 to anyone, that's fucking ridiculous. What we've seen here is not just the seizure, but the symbolism of having it fall apart on the 15th anniversary of the deadliest terror attack in American history.
I know.
Optics are horrible. I think it's Scott Adams had pointed out that, the day before you had the Bastard of Deplorables comment, which really –
That was just the day before?
I think actually it was a couple days before, but it was like a Friday night fundraiser. That was when she called half of.
Although I believe she said it twice. She said it in a BBC interview, I want to say, but
it was an interview with Israeli TV. But
that's what it was. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But that was when it became. That was when the comment at the fundraiser went viral, and on its own, that really wouldn't have been much of anything. It was just a sort of a joke among Trump supporters. But I think Scott Adams pointed out that the health issue provides a fake because. Because right. People are unaffiliated voters are going to see that, and they're not going to want to vote for a candidate who might fucking die if she from the stresses of the Oval Office.
Yeah, that's definitely
say
true.
So they're going to say, "Oh, I decided to vote for Trump because of the whole basket of deplorables thing." It's the perfect punch.
Although I think the basket of deplorables thing was extremely detrimental to her because it was at a Barbra Streisand fundraising event, and everybody's really sick of this elitist bullshit, especially undecided like middle America voters. It was at a really bad time for her to say that, to categorize a group of people. You know, everybody's also sick of being called racist. I'm just so sick of being called racist every day. Yep. It's really pissing everybody off.
Yeah, that's part of it. And also the fact that, well, I commented to a friend of mine. It's not just that she insulted half of Trump supporters. It's that she insulted them in a really dowdy, old lady, out of touch fashion.
Yeah, like, and she sounded really shrill. And yeah, it was
you
so
dirty funny. Rapscallions, you.
Yeah.
You know, the whole narrative of this election is in part, you know, the Trump supporters are the young, the hip ones, the ones who are the cutting edge. We're the new hip. 30s, if you want to put it like that. And Hillary represents the establishment, the old, ossified, out-of-touch establishment. And when you and when you use a dowdy insult like basket of deplorables, like, sure thing, Grandma, you know.
Yeah, really.
But I realize I've been sort of monopolizing this a bit too much. What are your thoughts on the news of this week and how the election's going to play out, Blonde?
The Hillary's health and
the DNC leaks and everything.
I mean, I think their campaign is in the toilet. Like every day I watch CNN and MSNBC and Fox News to see really what they're telling people. And I just think that they're misrepresenting this so much. It's incredible to me that they're still keeping this narrative alive that Hillary even has a chance. I mean, I don't trust polling. I'm starting to work on a segment about this right now, but like, I really do believe that in most polls, they interview way more Democrats. They're way more Democratic respondents. And so, I mean, I don't think that there is a real chance that Hillary is going to take this. And so she's like, the crux is the minority vote here. And I've been saying from the beginning, like, are Black people going to line up to vote for this crusty white old lady? Why? Why is she relatable? I don't get it.
Well, I pointed this out, and people have difficulty buying this when I say that in this election, New York is probably going to be won by Trump. And I said
I think so too. People are shocked when I say it.
Well, because I'll summarize it here because a lot of this isn't really too much interest to anyone who's outside of New York. But basically, you lower Democratic turnout in New York City, which is the part of the state's Democratic base. You do that by, number one, lower Black turnout because Blacks have had one of their own in the White House for 8 years, Obama. That was the big reason why Black turnout was so high in 08 and 12. They're not going to turn out to vote for the whitest white bread Clinton Kane ticket, an old white lady and an old boring white guy. So they're going to stay home.
Yeah,
and number two, the Bernie supporters are going to stay home in a big way, particularly after the DNC leak revelations this week. I mean, I was with the Bernie supporters during the New York primary a few days before. This is an article I wrote for Right On, My Life with the Bernie Sanders Cult. And me and my buddy Goldman, we went to a Bernie-themed cocktail dance party in Bushwick, which is the right now is the center of the hipster apocalypse. It's migrated out of Williamsburg because Williamsburg is just too yuppie and too expensive now. All the people there, they hate Hillary. They hate her. They won't vote for her under any circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
6 years as a bogus Republican. We actually had on camera, and Goldman didn't put this up just because it was, you know, not very well filmed. But we talked to this like chunky fat hipster chick who's all like, and he's filming me on his camera, and I'm like, and I'm asking her questions. Like the first question I ask is, okay, why are you supporting Bernie Sanders? And she's like, well, I'm just really into the Democratic Revolution he's fostering because she's like drunk and shit. And like, okay, and I'm like, okay, what kind of issue? What issues are important to you? Like, you know, is it education, healthcare? Are you attracted to his stances on those issues? And she's like, well, I just really like everything he's doing. Okay, the next question I asked was, okay, what do you think of Donald Trump? And then she spits out, I think he's a piece of shit. Okay, and then the third question I asked was, okay, Bernie Sanders loses the primary, and in the general election, it's Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. Who do you vote for? And I swear to God, she had to think on this one for 10 seconds because you could see the wheels just slowly, slowly turning in her head. And eventually she says, well, I think I'd vote for Hillary because Donald Trump is a piece of shit. And then Goldman just fucking loses it because he's sick of this woman. And she's like, okay, why do you think Donald Trump is a piece of shit? Is it his personality, his policies, whatever? And she's like, well, I've just never voted for a Republican in my life, and I'm not going to start now.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You can tell.
I mean, that really is the issue here. It's like, how many fat, single, millennial women are going to go out and vote for Hillary because she's a woman? Like, they could really lose this for a Republican. I don't think it's likely. I mean, I think that they're all lazy and busy eating and stuff.
Well, it's obvious for me from like I said, that I wish the video was up even if it wasn't that badly edited, because you could see the way she was thinking. She was trying to – she didn't want to voice overt support for Trump or look – she wanted an answer that would not get her banned from all the cool parties.
Oh, but
I think a lot of these people, they may say they're going to vote for Hillary, or the enthusiasm was very low. They're going to stay home on election day, or the ones who do come out are going to vote for Jill Stein, which will lower Democratic turnout in the city, to sort of bring it back around to the main point.
Whereas, why Hillary's comment was baffling to me. And she said it twice, so we know it was deliberate. But it just energizes Trump's base.
Whereas turnout's going to spike in upstate and Long Island, which are Republican bastions. The biggest Trump rallies I saw on the campaign trail when I was covering it were all in upstate New York. In Albany, the state capital, which is only about less than 100,000 people, more than 20,000 people turned out at the Times Union Center to see Trump. In a city that hasn't elected a Republican mayor since World War I.
Wow.
He's gonna take this easily, like, you know, not by a huge amount, but like 51-49. It's gonna be a landslide at this point, just because of the health issues and everything else.
Right, I agree. I mean, but it could change like very precipitously. So I suppose, but I don't really see how Hillary could bring it back to her favor. Like, I feel like if it changes, it's just going to be more in Trump's favor. Like if there's a terrorist attack or something like that.
Well, the big thing we have coming up is the debate. One week from now, and. I have no clue how Hillary is going to survive this after seeing she has a seizure just from walking around in the morning at an 9/11 memorial. How is she going to stand up to Trump questioning?
And she's going to be under incredible scrutiny too, even on breaks. Like if she takes a bathroom break, people are going to be all over it.
I mean, they could conceivably do it by, I guess, pumping her full of Thorazine or whatever chemical they were doing. That creates problems of its own. Even if she doesn't have like some kind of health issue, Trump could very easily provoke her into like, you know, like that famous "what difference does it make" gaffe. You know,
right.
That would be super. I mean, if Ron Johnson could provoke that gaffe out of Hillary, God knows what Trump could do. He's probably sitting in the Trump Tower right now, just salivating and rubbing his hands.
Oh, totally. She's very bad off script. Like, she's good at these appearances where she's able to read off a teleprompter. But she's good on like TV, but she's really bad on the spot. And so I just cannot wait for these debates. I'm just, ooh,
yeah.
It's going to be so exciting. Can't wait.
Since you live on the West Coast, Blonde, I wanted to get their thoughts on whether or not Trump could flip any of the Democratic states on the West Coast. I sort of predicted that, and I'm not too confident about it, but I suspect that Trump could have a good chance of actually flipping both Oregon and Washington red because they're primarily white states. Well, like in Oregon, for example, like Portland is very liberal, but outside of Portland and like Eugene, the entire state is like Texas.
Yeah, and that's exactly how Washington is. I don't know. I'd have to look at the breakdown, the population breakdown, to give a good assessment there. But I think it's possible, but very unlikely.
Well, I thought it was interesting that Trump, you went to a Trump rally in Seattle, right? You
know, no, I couldn't get to it because the traffic was too bad.
Well,
I couldn't even get there.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
But that's
another thing. There were apparently like 12,000 people there.
Well, that's an interesting item that Trump is actually holding rallies in Washington state, which I don't think a Republican has probably campaigned in the Northwest in what, 20 years maybe? Because those states have been solid blue. Trump has been able to broaden the Republican coalition because he's bringing in people like I said up in upstate New York or the Rust Belt, people who for the anti-free trade stance. Free trade just absolutely destroyed the Rust Belt and many of the manufacturing communities and rural America and whatnot. For 20 years, those voters really haven't had anyone, and they've been politically homeless, you know,
right.
Since the NAFTA was passed into law by the Democrats. It was signed into law by Bill Clinton, but the Republicans were also pro free trade, so they didn't bother trying to harvest this potential source of votes. So right. We've seen actually electorally is that Trump has actually lost some support versus Romney and McCain in some western states like Texas, but he's more than made up for it for increased support in Michigan, Ohio, and whatnot, places that
right.
You know, he could actually win and thereby actually get the presidency. It's a very significant deal.
What state do you think is the most pivotal? I was watching Fox News yesterday, and they were talking about how Pennsylvania may be irrelevant, and I was like, what?
Pennsylvania, I think, would be the most important state in terms of Pennsylvania is like the archetypical Trump state. You know, even though it's gone Democratic in large part because the whites live in the rural center of the state. But there's a kind of an apocryphal statement about Pennsylvania. It's Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle. I always thought it was interesting too. Living in growing up in Syracuse, New York, you cross Pennsylvania, and it's like you're in the deep south of all these churches everywhere. But
yeah. Yeah, that's true.
What's going on? What's going on in Pennsylvania is that even though it's it is a purple state on paper. It's gone blue in all the preceding presidential elections because there's been no candidate. There's no anti-free trade candidate. And Trump has excited, you know, Pennsylvanians in a big way with his anti-free trade stance. So I think Pennsylvania will be the most pivotal state. It's a toss up between Pennsylvania and Michigan. Both of those states go red. States that Trump's platform is tailored to, it's over. And I imagine a lot more states than that are going to go red. I predicted that Trump's probably going to take every state except for California, Hawaii, Minnesota, Vermont, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Maryland, Delaware, and DC, obviously. Maybe too optimistic, but everyone has been way too pessimistic.
I agree with you. Yeah, especially I think Brexit is really telling about what we're going to see and how polls are misleading. It's people are sick of globalism in every country, and I think that that's going to be expressed and manifested in this election.
Yeah, and the elites have been responding to this with being even more insulting. Like, I saw an article, I think it was from the Buckley Club a couple days ago. It's like, no, the problem isn't with the politicians. The problem is with the voters. See, you voters are dumb. You don't understand what you want. You need to realize that having your jobs outsourced to Mexico and China and having hordes of refugees being poured into your hometown is a good thing. You know, and if you can't see the benefits of that, because you're a filthy racist and you probably should not be allowed to vote.
Yeah, you're so stupid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
People see that attitude. They see the naked open contempt for both wings of the spectrum. Both the leftists in the elite and the so-called conservatives in the elite. And they say, you know what? Fuck you. I'm going to vote for Trump anyway. I'm going to vote for Brexit. Even if I'm not, 100% on the details, you people viciously attacking me for this, we've had.
Right. People are emotional voters. I thought it was a really bad move.
Oh, God, yeah. And it's almost like they don't know how to stop themselves. I mean, at this stage, there is going to be some...
It's the lying, too. Like it's like they couldn't... It was really obvious to me they couldn't get their story straight about Hillary's health scare, saying that it was overheating and then pneumonia. It's like, why didn't you just keep your mouth shut until you, had one story? They're not even good liars. It's like they just don't give a shit anymore. They just deal as lies all the time.
This may sound a bit overdramatic, but there's a good deal of psychopathy in these people too. That's a telling element of psychopathy is like they're very cunning, but they're not long term thinkers. Like one of the archetypical psychopaths would be Ted Bundy. Now a lot of people don't know this is that Ted Bundy, when he first got arrested in Colorado, he could have actually very easily gotten off without being charged because all the evidence against him for the killings was circumstantial. But he was so obsessed with getting out of prison that he did a prison break, and then he fled to Florida, where he ended up killing more people, killings that were tied to him, and then he eventually got the death penalty for that. Psychopaths, Hillary is an obvious psychopath, but you have psychopathy to a lesser extent in the entire media complex, and they're not thinking long term. They're not thinking like, okay, this could hurt us in the long term. We should they're like have to rush from point A to point B, point A to point B. It's also a form of reactive thinking.
Myopic focus on like the immediate reaction of the American public is idiotic. Like they do this every single time there's a terrorist attack that's obviously perpetrated by Muslims. Like the first report is like white man. I'm like, why would you ever? You're just hurting your credibility. How do you not see that immediately misreporting this is going to hurt you in like 6 hours when we find out that this was a Muhammad or something?
A white man, a straight white man who goes to church on Sunday, shot up a bunch of innocent black men. Praise Jesus, and we need to do something about toxic male masculinity. Oh, wait, it was a Mohammedan. Never mind.
Yeah, the story gets dropped and, never addressed again. Like the Corinne Gaines story is a good example of that. The media just abandoning a story when they realized what the actual substance of the story was about.
Or we saw, for example, with the Orlando nightclub shooting, where basically it's competing victimologies. Who's the bigger victim, the Muslims or the gays? And it turns out the Muslims were.
Muslims are the bigger victims,
Well, what we saw was, I think there are a number of gays or people, LGBT type people who moved over to the conservative column after seeing that. But you also had people who were gays were protesting a few days later. It's like Republican homophobia caused the Orlando shooting. Yeah.
The fuck did you get from that point to that point?
Yes. Jeez,
the mental gymnastics that these people can do. It's
remarkable. You had Sally Cohen, who's that famous lesbian on CNN, was blaming the Republicans for this, because, that makes a whole lot of sense. A Muslim shoots up a gay nightclub in the name of ISIS, and it's the fault of those evil, dirty Christians in the heartland.
Ugh, God. What is wrong with her?
These people are mentally imbalanced. And
she was on Crowder yesterday, and she just got such a bad smackdown.
Wait, she was on Crowder? Oh God, I have to watch this.
Oh, it was so good. She just kept taking anecdotal, like, indefensible stances that he would just easily just smack down one at a time. She looked so exacerbated emotionally by the end. I thought she was definitely going to get off and cry.
Well, I'm kind of surprised she even appeared on Crowder to begin with. I mean, he's kind of a cream puff, but still, she looks like she's the kind of safe space yeah. type person. But I have to watch them. I'm really not a fan of Crowder, but, you know, if he gave the smackdown to Sally Cohen, you know, props for that.
I mean, it was good, and they're friends, too, but, like, she had made such appalling statements about Sharia law in the last few weeks, and, you know, being a lesbian. I don't know if you saw that petition going around about, you know, get Sally Cohn to go to a Sharia law country. They would just kill her immediately, I'm sure. Oh, you're a lesbian? Let's chop off your head now. She doesn't know what she's saying. These people are totally brainwashed. It's multiculturalism.
Well, I think I vaguely recall back around when the RNC or something, the immigration speech, she was declaring, you know, Trump is going to oppose a religious test of the border. We'll be the only country in America that does it. Or was it Hillary? And it was like, oh, have you ever heard of a little country called Saudi Arabia, which literally says in its visa restrictions that Jews are not permitted to enter the kingdom of Saudi Arabia? That country that's giving money to the Hillary campaign? Ever hear of that?
Yeah, really. That's different. God.
Yeah, it's
the hypocrisy. But how can you even exist with so much hypocrisy, so much cognitive dissonance in your mind? Like I don't know how these people truly, like, from an anthropological standpoint, I don't understand how these people can live with this coexisting in their minds.
I think it's a lot. I mean, I kind of, especially
with feminists endorsing Islam, that is one that I just cannot. How?
Well, there was that. I think it was who's that name of that redheaded creepy feminist? Lori Penny. She after the cologne rape story breaks, her response was like, "I am so thick of racist using the cologne rape attacks as an excuse to push xenophobia." It's like, yeah, we're pointing out the fact that these refugees, these Arab refugees, are going around assaulting white women, and you're more concerned for their you're more concerned about racism and xenophobia.
Oh, I know.
The fact that women are getting raped.
Right. Ugh. God.
Yeah, the same people who are driven to say apoplexy over, like, say, the Brock Turner case got nothing to say about, like, cologne rape cases or anything like that.
Yeah, really. Except for the xenophobia aspect. And in Germany, they're just in complete denial. They just released, like, a public service announcement that was about rape and had pictures of, you know, cartoons of rapists. They were all white guys. Like, are you friggin' kidding me? Like, how much German rape? You know, we can't look at the statistics and tell, but how much do you think is realistically perpetrated by Muslims? I mean, I bet in Sweden, 77% of rapes are perpetrated by 2% of Muslims. That blows my mind.
I, at this point, this is like the only explanation I could go back to that makes any sense is like the anonymous conservative RK selection theory explanation, where the right. R selected the rabbits, as it were, the leftists are siding with their fellow R selected rabbits because they want to sow chaos. I mean, I got a lot of flack back in February where I posted an article on my blog called "Why Feminists Want Men to Rape Them," and it's the only logic. Yeah, everyone's like, "Mad 40 support." It's the only logical explanation. Why would you support the importation of more? I mean, there was that case of that German Antifa woman who was holding up the sign that said it's like better rapists than racists. I'm not sure whether that was fake or not, but basically, on a certain level, you know, I think they genetically want to these.
Well, I mean, okay, imagine you're a man and you've never seen a beautiful woman in your life. You've been surrounded by, you know, ugly women your entire life, and then you see a beautiful woman. I'd imagine that phenomenon is also occurring to women in Sweden and Germany, where these men are just pussies. They're just the native men are just beta males, just white knights, you know, meninist types. And then an alpha type that, even though they're violent and stupid, comes and you're just sexually attracted to their aggression because you didn't realize you've been surrounded by betas your entire life.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. But also, you see a lot of these women are putting themselves in deliberately dangerous situations. There was a case of this. There was this, like, this German artist, I think her name is Milo Moray or something, who was protesting the rape attacks by going into refugee-heavy areas in cities in Germany, like, naked, wearing, like, a sign that says, "Don't rape me" or something. And you have to think, at a certain level, she's putting herself in a situation where she's going to be raped because she's going to areas where confirmed rapists live, walking around naked like a piece of meat. Like,
I do not care if that woman gets raped. That makes me feel nothing because she 100% brought this on herself and deserves it. Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
That's a very misogynistic statement.
It's true. What does she think is going to happen? If she got raped, she can't be like, "Oh, I played no part in this." It's like, what?
Oh, what? If she gets raped, what she's going to do is she's going to blame toxic masculinity.
Ugh, God. Yeah. Ugh.
Do you see any, I mean, how are we supposed to get along with these people? I mean, how is even if Trump wins, even if nationalism is on the rise in Europe, how are we going to survive with a large portion of our population that is actively seeking out death, that is actively seeking out destruction?
Because I think that they're brainwashed, and I think that a lot of them, especially in the feminist camp, women will go along with social norms. And as long as feminism is an acceptable social norm, women are going to continue to do that. We both know that women are at the helm of this. This entire cultural destruction has been caused by feminism, I believe. So I think that if we can reroute that, that the vast majority of women will get on board, especially get on board with traditionalism. And I think that that's really the way to deal with this. I mean,
hashtag every woman adores a fascist. But yeah, I think you have a point. But on a certain level, I do think a lot of these people are going to have to deal with them in some fashion. Some of them will come over to like the right side. I mean, I sort of made this point like 2-3 years ago that a lot of women and a lot of and some of these pussified men would slowly come over to our side as we took up in popularity. Like there used to be a strain of thought in the alt-right and the manspheres, like, well, we need to moderate our tone because women are turned off by us. Non-whites are turned off by us. And I was like, the conservatives have done that for years. The libertarians have done that for years. And where did it get them? Exactly, squat. And now,
yeah, that's just capitulation.
And now in 2016, we have half of the media establishment running scared, running in circles, afraid of a cartoon imaginary frog. nobody moderated shit here. We did the opposite. We hit the accelerator with our middle finger flying in the air.
Oh, I know, and it's so great. And then, Hillary by name bringing up several of Milo's Breitbart articles. I mean, can you imagine how tickled pink he was about that? This just fuels us. All of us that are like ENTPs and that are debater personality types, we're like, all right, social justice warriors, just give me this lifeblood that will just fuel me into this election so I can get more people on the Trump train.
I know, man.
Do it, I swear.
I know Alex Jones had a spontaneous orgasm that day because he's been waging war against the evil Illuminati establishment for decades, and he's finally been called out by name by the archetypical head of the establishment.
It's so wild that he's the voice of reason these days. It blows my mind.
I used to dislike him because I thought he was a nutty conspiracy theorist, but you know what? He's making a lot of sense. I know.
Lately, it's like some things I hear come out of his mouth, and I'm like, "Wow, that is nonsense." But as of late, I'm listening to him, and I'm like, "Yeah, Alex Jones on the money as usual."
Yeah, that speech was. I did a live stream about that speech shortly after it concluded with Arini and a few other people, and our conclusion was that, well, if you recall, the speech was delayed for 2 hours because number one, her health issues, and number two,
right.
I think that her speech writers realized at the 11th hour, like the original speech was probably going to name people like Mike Cernovich, Rouge, etc. But they realized, oh wait, if we name these people, we're going to give them power. People are going to start Googling them and such. So at the 11th hour, they rewrote the speech to basically be like, the same shit she's done before. She's literally recycling that. She's recycling, for example, that who's that black Maya Angelou, that quote she's been using for months. I like the way Arini described it. It's like, it's like waiting. Well, I described the speech as like, the night before, it's like waiting up for Christmas, waiting for the presents under the tree. And then when you go down, you unwrap the present and it's a sweater. And Arini was like, no, it's like getting the exact same sweater you got last year.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I mean, I think that was a really bad move, too. She doesn't seem to care about bringing over voters.
Well, I think at this stage they've sort of conceded that they're not going to be able to convert unaffiliated voters.
Because these are highly controlled speeches that she's revised and several people have read. So none of these are impromptu things that she said off the cuff like Donald Trump's gaffes. So she must have just thrown in the towel on.
They're trying to do is drive up turnout among their key demographics. They're trying to whip up, the single mother votes, the black vote, the Hispanic vote, the minority vote.
So she's trying to energize her own base.
By scaring them into being like, if you vote Trump, he's going to round you up and put you in a FEMA camp and make you listen to Elton John all day.
Man.
Or something like that. It's been a great discussion so far, but at some point we do have to take a break, and this is probably the perfect time to take one. We'll be back in a few minutes. I'm Matt Forney, and you're listening to This Alt-Right Life.
days are long. Twilight sings a song of the happiness that used to be. Soon my eyes will close, and I'll find repose, and in dreams you're always near to me. I'll see you in my dreams, hold you in my dreams. Someone took you out of my arms. Still I feel the thrill of your charms. Lips that once were mine, tender eyes that shine, they will light my way tonight. I'll see you in my
You're listening to This Alt-Right Life with Matt Forney.
Welcome back. I'm speaking to Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. Now, just to change tacks a bit here, this is something you told me about when we met at the RNC, and we could probably get to that topic a little bit, but you're running with the cult of MGTOW. I think you also mentioned this when you were being interviewed by John Steele too. You want to describe this too, because they're not fond of me either. They're not fond of anyone, I guess.
I mean, things have really simmered down with MGTOW. I don't want to play the dumb woman card, but like before I started my channel, I was not super familiar with forums and I don't know, internet speak, man, internet speak. So like when MGTOWs came after me, right, when I started, because they hate traditional women. When MGTOWs went after me, like initially, I like addressed it in a video where I thought it was very fair. And the backlash was just tremendous. It's the only video I have taken down for like content reasons.
Oh, I didn't know you took it down. Oh.
Yeah, yeah. I was harangued for like weeks and weeks with MGTOWs. It was really bad. It was really bad. And that was at a time when I was like, I didn't really understand that this is just like a shit talking culture with no real intent behind it, you know? And so it was like I was worried because I was taking kind of some of the threats and stuff a little bit seriously. But, you know, I think it was just shit talking and everything.
Somewhere along the line, MGTOW devolved into like this really weird leftist cult, particularly around under the influence of I forget his name, Barbar or whatever his name is.
Yeah, and you point Sandman, which I've never had an encounter with either of them. So.
No, it's funny because I posted up a video about a year ago criticizing Barbar and criticizing MGTOWs, and Barbar despite being, he's got like 30,000 YouTube subscribers, and I'm a comparative small fry. Back then I had maybe about 1,200. I'm not even sure if I had 1,000, you know? He finds my video and responds to it within an hour of me putting it up. Like, holy shit, how thin-skinned are you that you have to name search yourself on YouTube constantly, find people who are criticizing you, and he's leaving just comments. And the guy's got this narcissistic obsession with me because he's name-dropped me in like 6-8 articles in like the past year. Like, you know, I'm going to get that evil bastard Matt Forney. He's a pushy worshiper, blah, blah, blah. The thing is, Bernard Chapin's pointed this out like aptly. These people spend all their time, like you said, they hate traditional women. They have more hatred for the right than they do for the left. They're constantly
And that's why I was really surprised by this onslaught of hatred that I got from them, because I kind of feel like intellectually we're in the same camp. And so when I addressed them in a video, I thought I was going to be well received. I really did.
I had no such illusions, because I was, you know, I basically called them a bunch of virgins, and their response was to basically call me fat and whatnot. But the point I'm making, that Chapin makes is, you know, 8 years, we've had 8 years of Obama. 8 years this country, the left has ruled this country. Yet MGTOWs never talk about Obama. They never talk about the anti-male policies he's instituted. They never talk about affirmative consent. No, they're obsessed with, like, Phyllis Schlafly, the kindly old lady who died recently. Rest in peace, Phyllis Schlafly. She, in their mind, is like the great villain who was oppressing men, because she believed in traditional gender roles.
And she helped defeat
the ERA.
Both
these people.
You know, John, the other, he made a video in response video about me, because I was on a live stream with like Blair White and Shoe on Head, and we've all gotten like, you know, really vicious attacks from MGTOW. So we were just talking casually about them, you know, and like we were like, you know, making fun of them and stuff. But we were treating them in the same way that we treat all other people. Like, for people like us YouTubers, we can't say that there's any topic off limits. Like, that's not how this is going to go. So John the Other made this video of us just like shooting the shit and talking about MGTOW. And it was just like hundreds and hundreds of comments about how we're horrible gynocentric cunts and they want to see us raped and all this stuff because what did they say? Because of the shaming language. They seem obsessed with shaming language. And I felt like I was just getting a lot of the same stuff that I get from feminists. Like, don't shame my lifestyle. Don't shame my body. I get a lot of the same stuff. I'm not saying it's the same movement, because they're also really sensitive to being compared to feminists. They'll rip you apart for that. So I'm not that.
They're really sensitive to that because they basically act like feminists, you know.
But they're really sensitive. Like, I've really found myself unable to criticize them even mildly without just a tremendous, tremendous, like, organized backlash with hundreds of participants.
Funny you've mentioned John the Other. That's a name I haven't heard in years. But back when he was Paul Elm's right-hand man and a voice for manginas, I wrote an article critiquing the whole – they set up this wiki called Register Her, which was a good idea when it was started, because it was going to be a repository of like women who falsely accuse men of rape, you know, genuinely lying psychopathic women. But then they expanded it to include the bigots category, which basically refers to any celebrity who makes an anti-male statement. And then they made one about, I think it was Catherine Hagel, because she made some kind of joke advertisement for Funny or Die, and they were like, well, this is not funny. You're talking about men being castrated. I'm like, you know, it's a fucking... Why are you acting like feminists? Why are you basically whining about someone saying, like, you know, jokingly funny things about you? And both John the Elder and Pauliam went off their rocker at me and started posting articles on A Voice for Men attacking me, which is funny too, considering at the time I just started running on my real name and had maybe about, what, 500 readers? But they somehow sought that out. They can't handle any kind of criticism.
Yeah, I found that really surprising. But I do understand. I understand their movement. I mean, there's really disproportionately favorable laws, divorce laws towards women. And I understand that. And that's something that I talk about in several of my videos. And these are causes that I really do care about. And so I'm surprised that they're not going after more left wing types. I mean, why are they not attacking feminists all the time?
Well, the thing
also, I have said repeatedly that I do not think that men that don't want to get married should get married, because that will just create a divorce situation, and there's nothing more destructive to the nuclear family than that. And I have said this since the beginning, you know, from the beginning. You don't want to get married, do not get married. I'm not saying that every man needs to get married, but society as a whole is better when the nuclear foundation, you know, the nuclear family is our bedrock.
I get a lot of that too. It's like, you know, even back during my stage where I was saying don't get married, I was still saying, you know, the nuclear family is a good thing. And they're like, well, you're just what a man to man up and marry to sluts. You know, that's their usual line. But the, I guess the nice thing we can say about these people is they've basically made themselves irrelevant because of this whole, well, they started with all this nonsense of how, well, there's no difference between left and right, and not Brithwaite's law. There was O'Sullivan's law. Any institution that's not explicitly right-wing eventually becomes left-wing because the people who are opposing the men's rights activists always were the left. It was always where it was, you see prominent feminists like Amanda Marcotte and Lindy West getting prominent writing positions at GQ or The Guardian or wherever. But at the same time, they wanted to pretend that the right was just as bad as the left. And they all sort of collectively face planted a few months ago when the Cologne rape attacks happened. And the first reaction of people like Polly Ilham and Dean Espe was to say that the women were lying and that this was rape hysteria. And then
I didn't know that.
Oh, that's exactly what they did. I called out.
Oh, that's another thing. They were so sympathetic towards Muslims. And that's another reason they dislike me as a community. Because they think that Islam has nothing to do with this. It's gynocentrism.
Yeah, basically all women are lying whores. And the Muslims didn't do nothing wrong, you know. And we need to form an international brotherhood of men to – I swear to God. It's like these people saw the movie Gay Niggers from Outer Space and they thought it was a model for how to live their lives. If you're not familiar with that movie, I'll give this synopsis. It's this joke movie from the early 90s about a bunch of gay black men who come to Earth and discover the presence of women. So they decide to kill all the women, and then the men are grateful for being liberated.
I mean, they just don't want to admit that men and women need each other. Like, we literally need each other to survive, and they have this artificial womb, like future fetish, you know, like a future where they can eliminate women. And in my video where I talk to them, I said, like, this cannot possibly be what you really want. It can't, you know?
That's psychologically imbalanced. And that's another criticism I made of them, too. They fantasize about this technological future. I made another video called The Myth of the MGTOW Future, which I pointed out, yeah, you imagine all these future technologies that can eliminate women. But do you see technology getting better right now, Blonde? It's going backwards in many ways. Like, these computers, they may be so-called – like, I was talking to you just before we started doing the pod test. I upgraded my computer to Windows 10, and my webcam no longer works. You know, you've got touch pads that don't work properly. You can't even turn them off. Computers crash more often. The smartphone, my smartphone today, it's a year old Samsung Galaxy S4. Every time I try to update Facebook on it now, it fucking reboots. We can't build computers that are as functional and reliable as like DOS machines back from the
Right. And especially the sex robot thing I find particularly fanatical, because can you imagine the level of technology that you would have to achieve in a sex robot for that not to be creepy for you?
You're basically talking about, yeah, you'd have to go past the uncanny valley somehow, otherwise you'll basically just be having sex with like a blow up doll that just happens to have a few animatronic parts.
Yeah, and only a few people are going to be into that, but 90% of Japanese men for sure.
Oh yeah, but to sort of get back to when they were trying to the whole rape thing, I actually called out Esme for this in a post, and I collected his tweets when he was trying to furiously backpedal on it. And you want to know how Esme responded? He falsely accused me of being a rapist.
What?
I'm dead serious. No, I'm not going to dredge up too much history, but there's this nut woman named Rachel Haywire, who was doing a website with a friend of mine, Ann Sturzinger. And it turns out Haywire they took about $20,000 for this site, and Haywire it vanished into the ether, and she was also psychologically abusive to Anne, and we blew the lid on that about a year ago, and in response, Haywire started circulating a rumor that I had raped Anne, and Esme decided to take it and run with it, despite the fact that Anne herself has denied it, and number two, he's supposed to be a men's rights activist, a guy who supports, you know, men. Here he is running around accusing a man of rape.
God, what is wrong? The hypocrisy. The hypocrisy.
The hypocrisy.
It's just unbelievable.
It's like these people exist on another plane of reality. But
I mean, I don't know. I mean, why can't they understand that, like, the traditionalists truly want the most equitable relationship between the genders? It's like that they can't even conceptualize this. They're just filled with vitriol for traditionalists. I just found it baffling.
I think a lot of them just became they are leftists at heart. They really aren't against feminism so much as they are against having. They basically, I mean, even when Elon before these guys went totally off their rockers. They actually kind of admitted it. They were like, well, we're fine with the feminist revolution. We just want to have, men have equitable, rights and responsibilities as well. They basically want to take it even further, which is, not going to work out because the whole feminism thing didn't work out on the first go. The only way to organize society is, around the nuclear family, around strong marriages and whatnot. And if you're going to stand in opposition to that, you're not much of an asset, are you?
No, and I think that their community also has like a lot of destructive tendencies, like the pickup artist community. But there's more deception involved. Like I've seen, I don't remember what it was, but I saw some MGTOW video about like how to like convince a girl that you want to be long-term with her and then bang her for 4 or 5 months and then dump her. It's like when you're sexually manipulating women that are fundamentally traditionalists, then that's like, you really put your oar in destroying the nuclear family, because that girl really just wants to get married. You could just have some one night stand with some skank like pickup artists do, but like getting into a relationship with a woman, that's psychopathic.
What the hell is wrong with these people? You just want to screw with some woman's head, some woman who did nothing to you. It's like,
tell her you love her for the first 4 or 5 months. That's when you get the most sex anyway, and then just dump her.
Fucked over by my ex-wife. I'm going to get revenge by fucking another woman.
Yeah. I mean, we're never going to fix gender relations like this. And I think that like a lot of those men have been scorned and have been divorce raped. And so I have a lot of sympathy for them. But I mean, it can't be all of them that have had like a really bad personal experience. I don't know.
I guess the original guys who got involved with this, like,
they've denounced it, haven't they?
Well, Rob Fetters was one of the original MGTOW guys, and he was actually a big influence on my thinking. If you go to his site, no-ma'am.blogspot.com, he has this very elaborate explanation of how cultural Marxism and how it led to our current predicament. The guy's smart, but these guys actually like lived life, and the original impetus behind I'll put this link in the post containing this podcast. But basically, the whole original concept of men going their own way was that back in the early aughts, the men's rights movements existing on forums and whatnot was going absolutely nowhere. So a few guys got together and was like, every guy's – they're not working together. It's kind of like each guy's going their own way. So let's turn this into a philosophy here. And the original the Men Going Their Own Way manifesto outlined three key points of – the three central points of men going their own way. Number one, instill masculinity in men. Number two, instill femininity in women. Number three, work towards limited government. And that was it. There was no mention of marriage or anything like that.
And the neo-masculinity movement has largely been lost in MGTOW. That's something that I see on Return of Kings and just generally in society. But MGTOW, they get really offended. Another triggering term for them is man up, the attitude that you should man up, you should be strong emotionally. So largely they shun neo-masculinity, which shocked me too, because I guess I had kind of conflated this Return of Kings community with the MGTOW community. I didn't know there were so many nuances in the manosphere. And that's another reason I got so much backlash, because I failed to. I was using MRA and MGTOW interchangeably.
Well, they hate Return of Kings. I posted articles there critical of MGTOWs, and they've gone.
Oh yeah, I read yours. It was great.
Yeah, they've sort of marginalized themselves.
But that's really sad, because somebody needs to be championing these causes. I mean, who's going to do it? Like, there are real men's issues that need to be addressed, and MGTOW has a strong online presence of thousands of people. They're tightly organized. They're organized enough that they can, they can have entire movements of, like, viciously attacking people online. Like, they can get together and do something. They're a powerful community. But I'm not seeing that from them.
I think we're going to see it naturally arise as a part of the Trump campaign. I mean, I've had this argument with guys like Common Filth before, but it's like, they're all like, well, nothing's going to change, blah, blah, blah. People who are people who are older, it seems to be a kind of a Gen X type thing. People who are cynical about the prospects of political change. But it's like, I've made this point, even, Trump isn't just important as, for what his policies are, but what he represents. He represents masculinity. He represents traditional values. Because
he does. And his infidelities and things like that, like, those are the parts of Trump that I have a really hard time overlooking. But also, I think that it's just the attributes of an alpha type man that need to be instilled in younger generations. Like, he's a formidable man. I think that he would be an excellent world leader. I think he would be a strong leader.
Well, he's not perfect. No man is, but it shows in the way he's raised his kids, who are all normal, successful families.
Right.
It turned out great. And here's another interesting fact. I'm not sure if you know this. You know that all of his, maybe not all of them, but the vast majority of his ex-wives and ex-girlfriends have actually endorsed him for president.
Oh, I did know that. Yeah, and then I read that article. Oh, her name escapes me, but a Bruder, something Bruder. She was the swimsuit chick. He offered to lend her a swimming suit, and the New York Times had that horrible hit piece on him. But she came out, and she was like, he's just the nicest, most respectful. We dated for 6 months, 8 months. He was just the nicest guy. And everybody says that about him.
Yeah, even if he is not an overtly, say, and again, we were having this argument with, like, you know, Cruz types back in the primaries. Even if he's not like a super Christian type guy who's hammering traditional values, just by acting as a symbol, he's going to move this country in a more conservative direction.
And look at his family, like, just juxtapose the Clintons, like ugly pear shaped Hillary, and then old decrepit sex maniac Bill with their weird, like, pudding faced kid, one child, their token child, and then Trump's family with like a million of them, and they're all beautiful and successful and tons of kids, and they look happy and boisterous.
They've had
Clintons are no match for the Trumps.
Yeah, you have an AIDS written corpse, you have a Parkinson's written corpse, and you have one daughter who may not even be fucking Bill's kids, if you believe the rumors about Webb Hubble.
She looks just so much like Bill.
Ugh, that's disgusting. Just thinking about that.
I can't get on board because she just has his nose and.
Visualizing Webb Hubble and Hillary Clinton just made me throw up eternally.
Gross.
Yes. But anyway, it's been a great discussion so far, but you should always leave on a high note. You should always leave the audience wanting more. Blonde, is there anything else you'd like to, you know, bring up before we close out the show?
On a high note? Oh, I guess we covered it. The high note is that I think that Trump, if he stays the course, is going to be able to slide his way right into the presidency. So that's my high note.
Yeah.
But my channel is Blonde in the Belly of the Beast on YouTube. You can find me on Twitter at LibtardAmerica or email me at blondeinthebellyofbeast@gmail.com.
And she's also co-hosts Beauty and the Beta with Matt Christensen, yeah. Skag3. Check out his channel. All links are in the description. But yeah, I was talking to Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, and I'll just restate it for the cheapskates. Check out her channel on YouTube at YouTube, Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. And check out twitter.com/libtardamerica for all of her works. Blonde, thank you once again for coming.
Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
And that was Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. And that will conclude this episode of This Alt-Right Life. I'll be back on Friday. Until then, I invite you to check out our website, righton.net, for our latest articles, podcasts, and videos. You can also check out my personal blog at mattforney.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the show, please share it on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media. If you're listening via SoundCloud, please like the show by hitting the heart icon on the player. You can also repost it to your accounts by hitting the repost button. To subscribe via SoundCloud, go to soundcloud.com/rightonradio. If you're listening via YouTube, please like the show by hitting the thumbs up icon below the player. You can also subscribe via Stitcher and the iTunes Store. And finally, if you are listening via the iTunes Store, please take the time to rate the podcast, which will increase its visibility and allow the good gospel of the alternative right and the European new right to reach more people. This Alt-Right Life is presented by Chloe Love and Davis Arini. Check them out on the web at chloelove.com and staresoftheworld.com. And the show also features music by Winglord, Illegitimate Non Carborundum, Don't the Bastards Grind You Down. I'm Matt Forney. Thanks for listening. I'm out.